So, does anyone have a fun story to kick off our episode?
So before my senior year of high school, I had this internship where I would be shadowing different pediatric doctors every day for a couple weeks. And on day two, I find out that I was actually going to be in the delivery room watching a C-section. And so I get
Like that
dressed in
day,
my
the same
that
day.
yeah that same day. So I get dressed in my teal scrubs. I walk into the delivery room and I'm kind of just tucked away, standing discreetly in the corner, kind of out of the way as they're kind of getting ready for the operation. So the nurses are filing in, all of like the assistants, the doctors, and as they're getting ready, one of the doctors walks up to me and she goes like, "Oh my gosh, Niles, so excited to have you here. I'm really looking forward to you kind of just observing. I want to give you a tip. So if you feel like you're going to faint at any point during the operation and like pause right at that moment," I'm thinking, "What am I getting myself into? I've never fainted before." So I'm thinking like, "What is happening?" And she goes, "Here's what I want you to do if you feel like you're going to faint at any point." So she goes, "Keep your back firmly pressed against the wall. And when that fainting spell hits, I want you to slowly slide your butt down until you're seated on the ground. And that should take care of things." And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, noted.
I don't
And
think I would be able to
so,
think straight if I was feeling like I was gonna faint, but you know,
right. And
thank
I'm
you
just
for the
like,
tip, I guess.
And so, the operation begins, and things are going smoothly. And then I cannot make this up. They bring out what I can only describe as looking like a crowbar. And so, sorry, this is kind of graphic, but then they make the initial incision, and then they are like violently crowbarring this woman open. And I'm standing there, and again, I can't make this up. I literally feel all the blood immediately drain from my face. I'm so lightheaded, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna pass out." And so I keep my back against the wall and slowly slide my butt down until I'm in a seated position. And I just like immediately feel like a lot better, but I still have to like sit to kind of collect myself. And I'm chilling there on the floor for like, I don't know, 2 to 3 minutes. And then I stand up. I'm like, "Whoa, that was crazy. Like that has never happened before." And then the nurse who's kind of sitting next to me says, "Oh, Niles, like when they take the baby out, don't get distracted by the baby. Like folks always get excited by that. Pay attention to the placenta because it's really cool what they do with it." And I'm like, "What is she talking about?" And then sure enough, the baby comes out, and
Wait,
then
did
I
you
don't
know what a
take,
placenta was?
I mean, from like biology class in high
Okay,
school, but I didn't know
like
what it looked
words,
like.
description.
And then so they like take the baby out and I'm like, "Okay, I'm not going to get baited by her instructions." And so I'm paying attention to the placenta and they literally like take it out and plop it on the woman's stomach and immediately I feel the blood drain from my face and get lightheaded again. I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to pass out again." So I sit back down, scooting my butt all the way to the ground, and I make eye contact with the nurse. And she just gives me the thumbs up and she's whispering like, "Good job, Niles, good job." And yeah, that's when I found out I was not going to be pre-med day two.
Honestly, great feedback that you learned early on that you didn't have to waste
Yes.
your time in college to, you know, be on the pre-med route and then later find out that you can't handle what happens in the hospital.
I
Oh
would have
my
had the
gosh.
exact same reaction. Like, that's the moment when I'm like, this is when it's over. This is time to figure out a new career for myself. Like, this
Time to
interest
tap
in medicine ends here.
out.
Yeah, tapping out. Oh
Next,
my
next.
gosh. I would never imagine such a graphic and scary story to be very entertaining and funny. So thank you, Niles, for kicking us
I know.
off.
I feel like Niles is going to be known for the graphic, entertaining stories because the last time
Oh
he was on here,
gosh.
he talked about a dead squirrel.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the details of the story, but I remember the vibes of being like shocked and very entertained. So thank you. that really stuck with me.
I try.
Than and I have a lot to learn when it comes to entertaining and telling stories. Just, you know, not even in like a professional setting, which I think Than and I do practice a lot, but like in everyday settings to brighten people's day and, you know, like offer a fun story when we're with our friends. And so that is what we are going to get into for this episode, just in time for the holiday season. So welcome back to Bamboo and Glass. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Than. So you already heard our guest at the beginning of this episode. He's already showcased his brilliant and hilarious storytelling when we were hyping him up on our dating show 2 years ago, Your Next Date.
Wow.
So welcome, Niles. It's so good to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing me back.
You like didn't explain what a placenta is, and I don't think I've ever seen a picture of it, but now I have a picture of it in my head just with you.
Yeah, I have like about, a Stranger, you know, Things sci-fi blob just landing on this woman's belly.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty accurate. I mean, that's what caused the fainting spell, so.
But I would love to ask everyone, what stories have you noticed that you are really good at telling, and what are stories that you're not so great at telling but you want to get better? I can start. I don't think I'm like funny or entertaining at all. I can't really think of a particular genre. I guess if I'm like really ranting about something, I can get pretty into it, like really invested.
You're
like
really
emotional.
Good at, I don't know if this is outing you, but you're really good at workplace horror stories.
A lot of real life inspiration.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. In terms of stories that I'm not so great at telling, like I wouldn't be able to do what Niles just did, which is like take a, like, I think I'm good at like telling a story / ranting, but when it's like describing like a graphic or funny or scary situation, I don't know. I just don't know what details to bring out. I don't really know how to pace the story. So excited to learn more about that. How about you, Than?
I would say I'm really good at telling stories about other people. I think I'm pretty observant. And so when people have, you know, crazy reactions to things or they do something crazy, I'm really good at telling those stories. But I'm not so good at stories that where I would be the protagonist of them. And that's something I would like to get better at, whether it's like in the moment, you know, letting myself do something funny so that it could be a good story later on. You don't know. You never know. What about you, Niles?
That's really interesting, because I, when I think about this question, I feel like the quote unquote, like kinds of stories I'm good at telling are really just like things that happened recently. Like I don't put that into like a genre or like bucket, so to speak, but it's more like, oh, this funny thing happened with me and my friends. Like I want to tell that to the other friends who weren't there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when I think about the second part, like stories I'm not as good at telling, I don't think it's a kind of story. I think it's like a timing thing where if like, let's say you're at a hangout with friends and someone just goes like, oh, tell the story about this, when that wasn't like a natural or like organic segue into it, that feels like I get like a little more flustered or kind of like fumble a little bit more when I'm feeling like it's a little bit on the spot or like random, so to speak.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Well, there's so many stories that people can always be telling, and I'm really excited for this episode because people are going into the holidays. There's a lot of, you know, catching up that people are doing, and they want to be entertained when they're hanging out for long hours with their loved ones. And, you know, they may need a good storyteller to have a good time. And so immediately I thought of you, Niles, because you are known to be one of the best storytellers amongst our friends. You even got the superlative at our dorm, the best storyteller. And so I feel like that's not something to take lightly. And I'm really curious, have you ever invested any time into like learning about storytelling, or does it just kind of come naturally to you? What are your credentials, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting because like I don't claim to be some quote unquote like trained storytelling expert. A lot of this, like I've never taken a class on storytelling or like read materials online. A lot of my like storytelling like craft, so to speak, that feels even like an injustice to say craft, has just kind of come with like trial and error and practicing with friends and people giving feedback of like, oh wow, like I want to become a better storyteller, like what do you think about when you tell stories? And my initial reaction of being like, I don't know. I just talk. So I think there is, like, the more I reflect about it, there is like a bit of nuance to it. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to have this chat today.
Yes. Do you remember, so Pan mentioned you got the Best Storyteller Award for your dorm. Do you remember other moments when you were complimented for your storytelling?
One moment in particular really stands out. It was my first year of college. Our dorm, also Tan was there, had this tradition called spotlights where folks would sign up for their time slot and just have a fixed amount of time to kind of share whatever they wanted about their life or like upbringing, kind of insert whatever you will or like take the story in whatever direction. So I signed up for my slot and I didn't really have an agenda. Like they gave you some prompts, but I don't even remember anything I was talking about, like being particularly noteworthy. I was probably talking about like, oh, I went to an all boys high school and like, this is what my dynamic is with my best friend, kind of just ad hoc things that were salient or top of mind at that moment. And truly just like told these stories and didn't think much of it. And then afterwards, the resident fellow in the dorm came up to me and she goes, Niles, you are a really good storyteller.
Yeah. And for context for people who don't know what a resident fellow is, like this is the person who kind of like manages the dorm. And so she's like this old Japanese grandma figure to us. And so she's got years of life on her as she's giving this compliment to Niles.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was so flattered and floored because I would never have like identified myself as a storyteller. I would have just said like, I am simply conveying information as I see it or like as I experience it. So that was very, very flattering. And it wasn't really until after college that I would say I started to develop my quote unquote storytelling muscles and kind of like embrace that as a personality trait or like something I like doing. Mm-hmm. It mostly came up organically with hanging out with friends where people would say, oh, Niles, like tell everyone the story about blank or this or that. And then everyone's like the room would get kind of quiet and people would like turn their body language towards me. And then I'd be like, oh, what's happening? But yeah, it wasn't till like post-college that I kind of started to embrace that a bit more.
That's such a great compliment too. Cause when I think about times when my friends and I would say like, oh, like you should tell the story, it's usually because like that person was closer to the event or they were the protagonist of the event. But it sounds like even for things that other people had been a part of, they just really enjoy the way you tell these stories, which is so precious.
Yeah, it's like amusing, but then sometimes I'll like jokingly eye roll when friends want to outsource stories to me. Like they were the main character and I was like the passive observer, but they're like, oh, Niles tells it better than me. And I'm like, come on, just tell a story yourself.
All right, let us get into these tips. I know you've prepared some great ones for us. So the first one is to outline key beats. What does that mean? And how do we do that?
Yeah, so beats is an interesting word that you actually came up with, Niles. And much like in a song, beats create the foundation for the melody, the lyrics, and other instrumentals. There are beats in storytelling. And there is the official definition of a story beat, which is a structural element of a narrative that's used to mark an intentional shift in tone. But like Niles was saying about not actually having studied this, I don't think we need to get technical in order to understand beats. So Niles, what is your take on what it means to outline key beats?
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need to, like when you're planning to tell a story, I don't think you necessarily need to write down the entire story beforehand. But I'll go into a story with a rough, like, mental outline of, okay, here are the key details or the funny bits that I for sure want to include. And I think of an analogy of thinking of other mediums. So, like, just like in a book or a movie or insert whatever other medium, you can't just be action, action, action the whole time. Like, that gets stale, that gets boring. You have to establish the context. Set up the characters and really build to the punchline. So I kind of use like a roller coaster as an analogy. So take your listeners on the roller coaster with you, like make each drop matter because you can't just be dropping the whole time.
Yeah, that also makes me think of a horror movie based on your example of it can't always be action. You can't be scared the whole time that you're watching. You know that there is the point where everything is like dead silent and you just know that there is something scary that's about to happen. And that really sets up the mood and anticipation for people to kind of be on the edges of their seats. And that in itself is also really entertaining. So that's such a great point that it doesn't have to be all action all the time.
Yeah. I also like how going back to the point about like pacing and, you know, the level of detail you offer, I think if you have like a mental outline of the key beats you want to hit, you can kind of keep track of like, okay, I've hit two of those beats. I feel like I need to move the story along a little bit faster. So that is a great tip.
Tip number two is it's all in the details. You've talked about details already a couple times in this episode, Niles. What do you mean by details? What details are important?
I think in very simple terms, I sort of picture storytelling details as existing on a spectrum. So on one end, you can just give the cold, dry facts. And on the other end, you can add a lot of richness and emotion to the story through details. So I'll give like an example to kind of paint the picture. So earlier this summer, I went to New York with some friends. And if someone asked me, hey, how is New York? On the cold, dry facts end of the spectrum, you can have, it was hot, we ate a lot of good food, it was a good time. And then on the other end, by sprinkling in that richness and that emotion, if someone said, how is New York? I could also say, we heard about this cute Japanese tea house called Cha'an. It was tucked away at the top of this single file staircase, probably didn't fit more than 15 people, super cute vibe. And I had the best matcha shaved ice of my life that was so worth the $20 we found out it costed only when we got the bill. So kind of like giving little nuances and richness through those details, I think really livens up the story. So in short, like paint the picture for your listeners, try to immerse them as much as possible in that setting and place them firmly into the story.
So, okay, you just named so many details there. How do you keep track of these details? Are you noticing these details as you're going through the experience? Like, for example, are you like, okay, this is a beautiful tea house, I need to start paying attention to all the details? Or is it more like you've gone through the experience and you look back and then you kind of retroactively try to remember the details?
Good question. For me personally, it's definitely the former, where as I am experiencing these moments, just kind of passively absorbing these things. But then on the other hand, I have also heard friends say that that's not that common and like it's kind of unnatural for like quote unquote the average person. And so if I think of storytelling as the sort of muscle you're trying to flex, I think of memory as all of the exercises to strengthen those muscles. So I have a couple of suggestions. The first being physically making a habit of journaling things that happen throughout your day to reinforce memory. We know when we write things down, it's easier to recollect those details later. So whether that's just quick bullet points like this thing happened, that was like put a smile on my face, or this thing happened that was kind of unpleasant, but it's like amusing in a way. So that's one suggestion. The second, I think mentally to that point, Sophia, trying as best as possible to consciously pay more attention to your surroundings and experiences, really trying to be present, live in the moment and soak in all of those details. I think there can be an element of shifting that mindset of like, I will try to this next outing, pay attention a little bit more, like what are people wearing? What are people saying? What's going on in the environment? So trying to soak in as much of that as possible, I think can be really helpful too.
Yeah, something else I noticed you do really well is capturing sort of like the range of details, or like, for example, in the story with the C-section, I love how you ended it by saying like, you know, now that I've gone through this experience, I had this whole transformation from like being interested in being a doctor to now like, oh my God, that's the end of the road. We're cutting off there. And so I love like that contrast you drew. And also with the story with the tea house, I love that detail of like, I'm like now making up details because you said the story so vividly that I'm now like making up stuff, but it's like, it was at the top of a blank, or like, it was like the room was so small, it could only fit like 15 people. And that kind of contrast of like being really intimate, but also being kind of far away and secluded, I I found that to be like a very like vivid detail that I remembered. Maybe remembered incorrectly, but like the vibes, like you know, like
yeah. It also makes me think of you know, in movies, like especially ones that are franchises, people like to rewatch it to look for Easter eggs in movies, and it's kind of again like that attention to detail that a viewer can get to have by rewatching things over and over again, and also then getting to appreciate the level of detail and attention that the creators have put into the work. And I don't think that's any different from the real world. Like, you know, at this tea house, there was someone who constructed the tea house, and maybe there's like little fun bits that have been included that make you feel a certain way, and just kind of maybe viewing, like feeling like you're kind of going on an adventure by, you know, your day, a day in the life of just exploring New York City can be a really fun way to also reinforce the memory of that experience too.
Yeah.
All right, Niles, what's our third tip?
Our third tip is don't be afraid to perform. So I think, you know, having just talked about including a lot of details to add richness to the story, I will give a small warning that before you just start willy-nilly including a ton of details in your story, there is the possibility of including a lot of details, but still sharing them in a not so interesting way. And so this tip number three, remember when you're telling a story, you're essentially performing. And during that delivery slash performance, I have some things like suggestions of things to pay attention to. So, you know, think about your facial expressions, think about the gestures you're making, your voice's intonation, all of those varying, I think can really rope the listeners in to want to pay attention. So for example, if your story has quote unquote characters besides yourself, bring them to life with different voices, different mannerisms. Like I know in the C-section story, I gave the nurse a voice, sort of, like give the characters different personalities to kind of bring them to life. And then especially if you can, try to even include bits of dialogue, whether that's like, you know, quote unquote accurate or like you're kind of paraphrasing. But I think if you've ever watched stand-up comedians, pay attention to how they do all of these things, how they bring characters to life in their stories, because they truly do it all the time. And I think it's a subtle thing that really adds a lot of richness to storytelling.
Yeah, I love that point about how the accuracy of the story isn't important. You can fudge the details if it contributes to like the humor or the character that you like, the vibe of the character you want to portray. Yeah, I love that.
I just watched Hasan Minhaj's new special, which I think is called The King's Jester. Have you seen it, Niles? Okay.
Yeah, I actually watched it live in Albuquerque.
That's awesome.
It was really interesting to re-watch the Netflix special and to see like what were the differences between live performance and like a recorded Netflix performance.
Yeah, so he gives like all this detail about how he kind of hates being older and going to the doctor now, because now people are his age, which means like the likelihood of him meeting a doctor who he actually knows is really high. And so he says, oh my God, it can't be, like, he's like, Dr. Gupta will see you. And he's thinking to himself, that can't be Arjun Gupta from Sacramento. And he's like, oh my God, it's Arjun Gupta from Sacramento. And my partner and I were talking about it, and we were talking about like, is Arjun Gupta real or not real? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's not real. Oh my goodness. Right. Yeah. And so it just shows again, it can be so convincing and entertaining still, even if there are some details that are fudged a little bit.
Yeah. Do you notice any interesting differences between watching live versus watching like the recording, which, you know, different camera angles, they're jumping back and forth. Like, well, what, how did it feel different?
One thing I noticed was, okay, this was not planned, but this ties beautifully into the next tip of tip number four is pay attention to your audience's vibes and energy. I think when I watched Hasan's live show in Albuquerque, he just does such a good job of riffing off the audience and like roasting them and, you know, tying in like jokes or commentary, like someone will like heckle him or whatever, and then he'll like bring that back. So kind of connecting those threads and playing that interplay between like storyteller and audience, I think was something that, you know, can't really be showcased as much in like a recorded setting. So anyways, to go back into the tip, I think that transitions really nicely where For me, and a tip that I'll share is if you're telling a story and you notice folks are really paying attention, lean into that. So include those, as you said earlier, Sophie, like include those little bits of extra detail, that additional side commentary, like go along, like laugh during the middle of your story. I love the point that you made earlier because I wholeheartedly agree that I really only do this with very, very close friends where there's not as much consequence. But if the harder that people are laughing, the more embellished, exaggerated, and dramatic the story gets. Like, I will just straight up start making up stuff that didn't happen because if it gives, like, close friends a laugh, like, sure, why not? So, yeah, I feel like, not to say do that all the time, but pick your setting.
Yeah. Because we mentioned stand-up comedy as just an inspiration that you take from Niles, I can imagine that there are people who are listening to this episode who maybe feel kind of self-conscious about, you know, doing the different voices, like trying playing it up a little bit. Do you ever find yourself in that situation where you do feel a little bit self-conscious? And if so, like, what are some things that you do to hype yourself up, I guess, in the middle of the storytelling?
Yeah, short answer, yes, yes, yes. I vividly remember one of the early friend hangouts after college when, again, going back to like when I started to sort of embrace storytelling, when friends would just put me on the spot and say like, oh, Niles, tell the story about blank. I so vividly remember my face getting red hot, like just getting sweaty and uncomfortable. Like all the eyes were on me in the room and it's dead silent. Like everyone's paying attention and just feeling like, I'm uncomfortable. Stop looking at me. And I think like short answer is it practice. Like the more I told stories, the more I got used to like, oh, it's not that awkward if someone stops what they're doing and like turns to face to listen, because that means they're entertained or like they're engaged and want to be a part of what's happening. So yeah, it's sort of a cop-out answer, but like it just gets better with time. And like the more you do it, the more I found that it just becomes a lot more natural and organic to be in that moment and be present and just like embrace it and like ride the audience's energy.
Mm-hmm. When you say practice too, do you practice the same stories or is it more practicing in a general sense of like your storytelling ability?
I definitely think the latter, just like practicing in general. Like I'm not really the type, not to say that this isn't helpful, but I'm not the type to say like, oh, to my housemate, like, I want to practice my story on you. It's more like over time of just like telling stories, you know, you kind of get nonverbal feedback like, okay, that punchline didn't land, or like maybe that detail's a little extraneous kind of thing. So just like the general sense more so.
Yeah. I like how it's very much not necessarily a serious practice that you have to do. It's something that doesn't have to be as formal as like, you know, asking someone to do a mock interview with you to prep for a job interview or something. It's something that you can quickly just, again, by paying attention to details, you can probably pay attention to details of how people are responding to you. And that doesn't have to be a whole conversation that has to happen after you tell the story, but it's something that you can kind of reflect on and just think, maybe next time I'll try something else, or maybe next time I definitely like need to keep this part or do something like that.
For sure.
Something that has boosted my confidence, which, you know, wanted to give kudos to Tan, is like sometimes I'll tell her a story because we're just on a call together, and then we'll meet up in person and we'll hang out with Tan, one of your friends, or with Irene or someone, and you'll be like, oh, Sophia, you have to tell that story. But because you've heard it, you will, if I'm missing a detail that you think is really funny, you'll be like, oh my God, stop. Like, you have to talk about that. And it feels really nice to have a friend next to you who's like really asking for the details. Cause then it makes me feel like, oh, if they're asking for it, then I can share the detail. And it's not like me pushing the details just cause I think I'm like so funny. It's like, no, my friend thinks I'm funny. So I get to, you know, exaggerate a little bit.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. And I think, Niles, you say that you've done that too, where friends tell you like, oh, you forgot this detail of a story.
Yeah, it's really interesting when, you know, in friend settings over time, like the same kind of stories come up, especially if they're funny and they're like the crowd favorites, so to speak. But I think it's the highest form of flattery when I'm telling a story for the nth time and a friend goes, no, you forgot about the part where this happens. Because that means that detail was so salient and like important to them that they want other people to hear their favorite part. So I love when that happens, because sometimes I feel like the story evolves over time. This kind of goes back to something you were saying earlier, kind of how we recreate moments through memory or like trying to reflect. It's really interesting as you tell stories multiple times that, oh, these details get left out, but you remember some new details, or like you connect these threads in a different way. So I love when friends are like, no, you got to include this bit, because it shows that like they were engaged and like want others to have that same enjoyment of it too.
Yeah, I love how supportive your friends are too of your stories and how excited they are to get, I don't know, they must be kind of excited and proud to have a friend who's able to tell such good stories as well if they're introducing them to new people. We covered so many tips that are kind of, you know, they can be considered like basic foundations of storytelling, but they also are just such helpful reminders of how things can really be elevated. And so can you lead us into the last tip of how to be a better storyteller?
Yeah, the final tip I have for everyone is anything can be a good story. I've had multiple friends tell me, Niles, you can make the most mundane things in your life sound so funny and interesting. And I think it's actually more nuanced than that. I really think that most people don't give themselves enough credit that their lives are interesting enough to tell stories about. And I would say good storytelling isn't necessarily looking for content. It's giving the content that's already happening in your life the spotlight that it deserves. Mm-hmm. And so,
love that.
Yeah. I think if you've ever watched or listened to stand-up comedians, pause the Netflix or pause YouTube and just reflect on what kinds of stories they're telling, because most of the time what they're sharing is actually pretty mundane, but the audience, the listeners, care about those stories because the comedians or storytellers in this example themselves care about the stories that they're telling. And so I think when the storyteller is genuinely invested in conveying this information, other people will join in and be genuinely invested in experiencing that alongside them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been loving just these people. I'll open TikTok and I'll see these videos. It'd be like a pretty mundane, maybe embarrassing, funny story with like millions of likes, so many comments. And it's interesting to go into the comments and see what people pick out and what they highlight, because it's often the most like mundane things, or just like the way they like pronounced a word or the way they exaggerated a movement. It's like those micro moments that people like really hold on to. And like each of those comments gets like thousands and thousands of likes too. So it's just like really funny. I think TikTok is really interesting because people are so willing to share their reactions to things. So it's like a communal experience. Like I'm like watching the funny video and I'm like, I have to go to the comments. Like the comments might even be better.
Sophia, do you have a favorite storyteller on TikTok that you would want to recommend people to check out?
This is the first one that comes to mind. There is this woman who is so good at doing impersonations of the Kardashians. And she will take like really funny moments from the episodes and like just like a one-liner, like that moment when Kim Kardashian's like, she lost her diamond earrings, and Kourtney Kardashian's like, Kim, there are people that are dying, right? She'll just take like that one phrase and just remix it in all sorts of scenarios.
That was so funny.
Her impersonations are like it's mundane. Like these scenarios are mundane. Like, for example, like they're at Thanksgiving dinner and, you know, Kim wants to eat a turkey and Kourtney Kardashian's like, no, like we can't eat birds, you know, like just like it's super mundane. But it goes back to like so many points you were talking about, Niles, where just like she's so good at performing. She like really pays attention to like the audience's vibe, aka like the commenters and what they're asking for and what they're vibing for. Anything can be a good story. Like the scenarios are super mundane. She has the key beats. Like she really knows when to drop those zingers that like everyone recognizes. Like, you know, everyone who knows Kim Kardashian knows that she had that moment where she's like, my diamond earrings. So yeah, I her name is, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but her first name is Yuri, and I'll put the...
We'll put it in the episode description. Yeah,
she's God. Niles, you'll love her. We'll watch these TikTok videos after this episode together.
But I guess on that note, I know you said that you're not necessarily like, you know, doing this as a craft, or you have like credentials or qualifications for this, but do you have any resources you want to share or things that you've watched that you personally think highlight really good storytelling?
I think, resources can be like interpreted pretty loosely. And I think watching good storytelling is a great resource. So two of them that come to mind, both of them are Netflix stand-up bits. The first is Trevor Noah's Son of Patricia. So funny, in my opinion, like ultimate rewatchability value. I've seen it so many times. I've still cried of laughter every single time. So that's the first one, Trevor Noah's Son of Patricia. And then the second one is Hasan Minhaj's Homecoming King. Mm. Also just so funny. And the way they act and perform and give their body language is just so immersive. And I think if you do decide to watch them, for any of the listeners who haven't checked them out yet, my suggestion would be to take mental notes as you watch these two bits. So kind of ask yourself, what kinds of stories are they telling? How do they perform? And how do they weave together different threads and key beats to make everything connect and cohesive? So.
And there you have it. 5 tips on how to be a better storyteller. 1, outline key moments and beats. 2, it's all in the details. 3, don't be afraid to perform. 4, ride the audience's energy and vibe. And 5, anything can be a good story. So remember, this holiday season, when you're catching up with loved ones and getting a chance to spend time with them, that the most mundane moments can end up becoming the best stories. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok at Bamboo and Glass. Consider, in the holiday spirit, letting us know what you thought of our podcast this year by leaving us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And with that, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season. But we'll see you still next Sunday. Bye!